Yo.
Oh no.
Have you been listening to Planet Money? Do you listen to Planet? Do you listen to the Misplay? Let's start there.
I do listen to the Misplay. I thought you typed Planet Monkey.
Which is more likely you will have listened to. Do you listen to any other podcasts?
Yeah.
What do you listen to?
I listen to Know Your Enemy. I listen to Southpaw. I listen to The Dig.
I know none of those. Planet Money. Do you know that one?
No.
Planet Money is a really big podcast on NPR. And there's a Planet Money series where they're building a board game. They set out to like develop a Monopoly killer. You know, they went into it with kind of that mind frame.
A Monopoly killer?
Yeah, like that. They went into it with like, you know, Monopoly is the biggest game in the world. Let's create a Monopoly killer. Nobody's created a better game. That's not true. I know you're not. I know you don't. It's not that they think Monopoly is the best game in the world. It's the most commercially successful, probably. But they talked to Leonie on episode one. Their whole idea is they're going to build a board game and launch it on crowdfunding. They took our entire show and now are making it better. And the game they're building is actually something Peter and I have talked about. It's a game about selling used cars, Stealership. That was going to be our second game.
I'm trying to envision you saying like, oh, I was really like into it. They sound great. Like, what a good show. But I'm also trying to envision the you that's like flipping the table because you're like, they are doing what we're doing and it's not fair.
Yes. I think they call that jealousy.
I'm Hunter Pence and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we don't take the full build in one turn. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. What are you talking about?
Have you ever played the card game Casino?
No, I've been to a casino.
These are completely different things.
Okay, yeah.
Have you ever watched the play Death of a Salesman?
I feel like I must have. I've seen a video of it maybe in high school. I don't remember anything, so I should just say no.
My impression is Casino is a standard playing card deck game that comes from the New York area because Death of a Salesman is in New York. My dad is from New York. My dad taught me how to play this game.
I'm from New York.
How do you not know how to play this game? Because you're not from the city.
Yeah.
But in this game, you have a row of four cards that starts and each player gets four cards and you match to collect cards to score points over time. But you can also add cards together. If I had a 3 and a 7, I could squish them together and take them both with a 10. So I was playing with my sister a couple weeks ago while I was visiting my dad and just didn't do the math on the board and took a trick and left some points on the board. And then my sister was like, take your points, because she'd done the same thing 3 times previously. But it feels bad.
Casino, you'll have to teach me.
It's kind of like a trick-taking game for tricksters.
Let's just build that. NPR has taken all the good stuff.
I said that about a year ago. Table Flip. Season 5.
Season 5, we sabotage NPR somehow.
Different than Stealership.
Well, the results are in the Board Game Geek contest. I haven't told you yet. We didn't win anything. on some level, I'm really happy. I'm really happy that we didn't, because we didn't do the things that I think other people try to do. We had somebody asking in Discord, can you send me a link for the voting? And I didn't send him the link because I was like, no, the spirit of the thing is you're supposed to go and play the other games and then vote and give them feedback, not just go in and vote for us because you like us. So I purposely didn't do that. So, you know, turns out like if one person had voted for us, we might've gotten second place. One of the things the organizer has said is that the turnout was really low. There were not a lot of votes in the system for anything. Mm. The game I voted for, Collapsy, ended up getting like second place in something. I don't know. Maybe it was just because of my vote. But I loved it. It was a really great game. But we didn't get mentioned. There were like 10 categories, you know, rule book, theme, best overall game, best game to play online, which I don't know how we don't win that one. I just don't think, and I'm in the same boat because I was supposed to give feedback on at least 3 games. And I only did one, just being honest. I only did one. So we all should have done more. Like there should have been more playing of games by everybody in the contest. So the sample size is really, really small, they said, on the voting. You know, so I imagine it was just a, you know, a couple of votes to win the whole thing. But Scott, I reached out to Scott. I shared this with Scott earlier this week, and Scott, being the, you know, the leader that he is, he's really the CEO, I've decided. And, you know, he said it wasn't nothing, you know, that we got a lot of feedback. We got experience making a printable game. And, you know, there's nothing stopping us now if we wanted to, you know, make this a print and play game. And we've learned a lot about how to do that. There were people in Discord who printed the game and played the game and gave us feedback. So it's not like it's a zero-sum game that, you know, entering the contest and not winning was a worthless thing to do. There are lots of takeaways from it. And, you know, we said before, we weren't going in it to try to win it. We were just going in it to learn about, you know, how that functions, how that works, and get more feedback from people. And we did. We got more feedback from people. We made the game more print and play friendly.
You took everything that I was going to say.
Scott took it.
No, but echoing the sentiment of our case for success was not the same. The criteria that we laid out for success in participating in the Board Game Geek contest was not contingent on some kind of award or placement or number of votes. Our metric for success was, can we put this in a place where we can get the kind of feedback that we need to continue progressing the game? And by that metric, it was very successful for us, both in the experience that we got in terms of how to develop and prepare materials for a print and play game, but also for the general process and overarching goal of build a physical board game that we can eventually bring to crowdfunding.
And I think that's going to help us as we move towards, there's a potential contest that we can enter that's a big one called Cardboard Edison. So today we're gonna open up our old roadmap, the one I had created way back when in January and then never opened again. We're going to look at that, and then we are going to revise and make a plan for us for the rest of the year. But before we do that, today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is the YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. They've got episodes in their designer series that I really like, where they suggest changes they would make to other board games. As someone who has fallen down the rabbit hole of board game design, I have more ideas now than I had a year ago. Mark, our next episode, we'll put it on our roadmap that we will take an episode and fix Monopoly.
Just like the NPR show, how does one beat a Monopoly? You create a stronger Monopoly.
That's right. So check out their designer series videos and all of their videos, and give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual channel.
Where are we?
We're on the road.
Again.
We're on the road to the end of the year, and we're on the roadmap.
Go on.
Well, we're not really on the roadmap. We kind of went off the roadmap.
I'm on it right now. It says Animal Kingdom Living Production Roadmap.
That's the name. That is how long we haven't edited it. When this game used to be called Animal Kingdom.
I can't tell if you actually believe it or if it's just trolling at this point.
I like to troll you with that for sure, but we can do a whole episode where I break it down and explain it. I can clearly show you how this game is Animal Kingdom.
We will put that on the roadmap. We'll put that on the show map. Roadmap for the game, probably different at this point.
Let's start with the highlights. What's something on the roadmap that we created back in January that we successfully hit?
We renamed the game.
When were we supposed to do that?
Last February.
But that was when it was supposed to be Animal Kingdom. But I'll give you one, Mark. August, we are in the first exposure playtest hall at Gen Con. Did we do that?
Absolutely.
We did it. That was a big moment. That was a milestone.
I would also say we didn't do Kublai Khan, but we did East Bay Board Game Convention approximately in May.
Yeah, that's right. We wanted to be at Kublai Khan with the game. And that May was when we were retooling, when we were deciding that Animal Kingdom had shifted a bit into other games and then Abstract Game. But we wanted to be at Kublai Khan, but you did go to the East Bay Board Gaming Convention. We also playtested locally, which it says we wanted to do in May, which I think we did in June with our game. I think it was June when you might have done one in May. I did one in June, but we did playtest the game locally. That's another one that we hit.
We have done a lot of playtesting.
September was all refine, playtest, revise.
I will say we've also done some of the manufacturing and logistics prep. We did a lot of research at Gen Con in terms of manufacturers so that we have kind of our starting base for when we really start to look at what kinds of decisions we're going to make about manufacturing. We've kind of done a lot of the back end research already through our time at Gen Con.
And there's something on the bottom of the roadmap that we created that is still going to be the bottom of our roadmap. At the end of December, we want to say we're ready to go to Kickstarter. Not that we're ready to launch the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter is not going to be live in December or January, but us saying this is the game and now we're ready to focus on how to create a successful campaign. So that's where I want to start with our roadmap today. And Mark and I are really live workshopping this. You're going to hear some clicking and some clacking today because we're going to be typing.
Click, clack.
But I'm starting by just saying at the end of the year, that's where we want to be. End of year, we want to know, we want to say, this is the game. We're happy with, 95% of the mechanics that playtesting has said that this is a fun game. We're not there yet. We want to be there by December. We're going to talk about what we have to do to make sure it feels like a fun game, because that's one of my sticking points at the moment. But end of this roadmap, December, in how many weeks is that? We're 6-7 weeks away?
Yes.
So what are other things that we have to do, Mark, before we can say, yeah, we're happy. This game is fun. People like it. Let's create a campaign.
I remember at the very beginning when we started testing Animal Kingdom at the beginning of this year, we had a lot of discussion of, do we care whether or not the game is fun right now? There are some folks that were like, yes, we need it to be fun right away. And we had other folks that were like, well, we need to have something that plays first. Get something that works before you can assess whether or not the game is fun. In my head, the first question that I would ask about that is, how are you going to measure whether or not it's fun?
The measurement that I want to use is when somebody playtests the game, they say, I want to play that again, or I would play that again. And I thought about all the questions that we asked at Gen Con when we had our, we worked on our feedback form and we put it out there and people filled it out. I just want one question on it now. Do you want to play it again? Like, I think I could boil everything down to, do you want to play this game again? And if the answer is no, then we're not there. Even if we love it, right? Even if we love it, even if you and, or is that's the conversation, Mark. Let's say the next set of playtesters we have who are not within the team, we take it somewhere. I've got a place in mind, but we take it somewhere. People play it. Maybe we get somewhere between 10 and 20 people who play the game. If they tell us it's not, they don't want to play it again, but you and I love it because we built it and we're connected to it. We have our own story with it. Have we successfully created a game?
Yes.
Are you happy with the end result?
Personally, yes. By the metrics that we've outlined in terms of what our desire is for the game and the show and the scope of this project, I would say no. But I mean, if I get my like nice resin piece board and we just get it for ourselves and it sits on my coffee table when I have a coffee table, that would be, for me, that would be personally enough in terms of interest about what we're doing in the project. I would see it as coming up a bit short.
And that doesn't launch season three, right? If that was the case, we wouldn't have a season where we're creating a Kickstarter campaign if the feedback is like, I don't want to continue to play. I don't want to play again.
Sure.
As you said, I'm personally okay with that. I would feel a little disappointed. There's probably 4 people listening who'd be like, oh, that's a bummer.
We'll make them resin copies too.
If those four people reach out, Mark will make you a resin copy. But I am hoping that the people who play the game will find it fun. And if not, that we know enough that we can make some changes. And I don't think all those changes have to happen by December. I think if we can say that, okay, well, we're going to continue with the game, but there are some things that we want to do to change the game to try to make it more interesting and more fun. So for me, that's the metric for fun, is if people are willing to play the game. Does that make sense? Are you okay with that? Do you have a better definition of or another principle that should be guiding us?
I think that makes sense, but I think then it begs the question of how many people are you going to ask? Because then if we're thinking about what we want to do for the rest of the year, I would want one of the things that we do along the way to the end of the year to be, well, we need to put this game in front of brand new players to the game 3 to 5 times.
3 to 5 different places?
Mm-hmm.
So roadmap. Let's do the first one. Let's talk about what I think the first one is, because it is in a week, and that is Kublai Khan Fall. The bigger one was back in, I think, May. That was the bigger Kublai Khan convention. This one is in the same place, but it's a little bit smaller, but they have a proto-spiel area. And I was talking to the person who runs that, who we now know through the Golden Gate Game Makers, that their name is Velgus. And they were explaining what we need to do, that we just, you know, buy a ticket for the day and then we can come and we can sit in the proto-spiel area. So that's my plan next weekend, is I'm going to take the game to Kublai Khan. I'm going to 3D print what I hope is a rotating board. So I'm going to make some changes to what it looks like, and I'm going to take that game to Kublai Khan, and I'm going to have people play it. And I only got one question on my feedback form. Do you want to play the game again? So how many people I get to play? I don't know. I'm hoping a dozen. I'm going to hang out for the day. We'll see. I'm putting it in the roadmap. I'm writing it.
Another place we could take the game to show the game would be one of the Golden Gate Game Maker nights at Victory Point Cafe.
And there's also the one at Dogpatch as well. So I don't know. One is on the last Thursday. I'm not sure what the Victory Point one. I'm looking at the Golden Gate Game Makers meetup right now, and they still have it on Thanksgiving. I don't know if that's going to work. But yes, take it to another or a couple more in-person events. We're really lucky living in the Bay Area that there's multiple places that we can take the game to and get people to play test the game for us, who are showing up to play test games. So
that's also quite a different audience than...
That's a good point.
Got to have a school staff game night and show our staff the game.
Well, the other thing that I've been thinking about doing is at Sports Basement. We almost did one earlier in the year. Sports Basement is it's like a Dick's Sporting Goods, but it's more community focused. And it has a community area that you can rent out for free. And have you ever done dance fighting there? You could rent out?
We rented out the Sports Basement in the city for a dance fighting event.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about having a two-player game night where we make it a misplay event. We bring our banner, playingcards.io, send us some stickers. We could bring those. And we could just invite our friends who haven't played the game, and they can invite a friend, or people walking by might see it. And then we could get some people to come in and playtest the game who aren't board game designers. Because you're right, it is a different set of people coming to those events. Like, these are people that are very experienced, they're working on their own games, and we're not necessarily sure that's the audience for our game. So roadmap, can we put that in the schedule for like early December? Is that possible?
I think so.
We pick a night, so it would be like a Wednesday after work, 2 hours. We rent out the space, tell our friends, and then we just bring a bunch of two-player board games. And we want people to play other games, not just our game, but our game will be there for people to play. But I think having like a focused two-player night is probably better than just saying, hey, a board game night, bring whatever. Because I think even if it's a low player count, if only 4 people show up, well, you got 2 games going. And 2-player games are generally quick, so you can try a lot of different games. I have some other games I'd like to bring. Fox in the Forest. We've talked about that. That would be fun to play with some people.
Game's great. I'm looking to see if I can book a room right now.
There we go. Filling this roadmap out. Early December.
2 hours? 4 hours?
2 hours, yeah. 4 just seems like...
too long for a 15-minute game.
I want 2.5 hours, so maybe there'll be nobody behind us and we can stay a little longer.
Jason, check your calendar. How is Tuesday, December 16th at 5 o'clock for you?
I'm open.
Let's go.
Works. Yeah, works. Putting it in the calendar and the roadmap. So December 16th, 2-player night at Sports Basement. If you're in the Bay Area and you're listening, lock it in.
What kind of event is this? Fitness, family celebration, sports team, nonprofit, school event, corporate event, other? Or are we going corporate?
I feel like technically we're a nonprofit at the moment. We're definitely in the red.
We are definitely not a nonprofit.
Not making any profit.
not you're I see what you're doing, but it's not that. It's already free. It doesn't matter what you put.
Okay.
We'll be other.
Okay. Progress. Making things happen.
Well, that outlines our show the game to new players 3 times. What else do we need to do?
I have to print the game in the next week. I know I very casually mentioned, oh, I'm just going to print the game, and well, that's work. I got to find a 3D printing thing that I can make to spin the board. I could always steal from another game, maybe, where you just kind of like put it on top of something that spins, or just bring a Lazy Susan. Like, those just exist. I could probably go to like a random dollar store and find something that rotates or spins, or like Home Depot or something.
Sure.
If I don't want to 3D print it. So getting those things together. I think the other main thing that we'd have to decide is what we've been testing internally. Internally, we've been testing the cards, and we've made some changes post Board Game Geek now. We've changed the patterns. There were lots of errors with our patterns in the version that we previously had. That's even in our print and play materials. We have now found 2 sets of patterns that we're testing. So there is a star chart card that has 3 patterns on it, and there's one that has 4 patterns on it. We are trying to decide, should we be playing with 4 patterns on a star chart, or should we be playing with 3 patterns on a star chart? 4 adds more complexity. 4 requires people to do more thinking. What we're trying to figure out is, what percent does the game end in a tie? Because if the game on a 3-pattern card is ending in a draw, let's say 50% of the time, that's too high. We don't want to create a game where a draw is acceptable at that rate, even for equal skill level players, I think. Agree? Disagree? I know Cole Lacoma made a really good argument. He's like, if you can make a game for 2 players who are equal skill level and a draw is 50%, that seems like it's perfectly aligned.
I'm not so fixated on caring about the rate of draws in the games.
Like I am.
Well, go back to your question.
Is the game fun?
My question would be, when players are drawing, are they like, I think they're kind of like, I think you set up this idea of there are 2 extremes. There's a draw, and then the 2 players go, oh, this is stupid. Why would I play this game? Or draw, well, we have to figure out who wins. Go again.
There was also, I don't know who said it, someone reached out to us, maybe it was on Discord, where they said that if the game does end in a draw, maybe there's some other criteria that can exist to break a tie. Whoever had the most, I don't know if there is a way, in the way that we currently have it set up, but closest to the pattern, I don't know. Is a draw, I personally feel that if you and I were playing this game and we were drawing a lot, I feel like I kind of wasted my time. I want to beat you. I'm not beating you. I'm not happy with that outcome that often.
Because you didn't win? Like, so you're in camp like, oh, we drew. I don't want to play anymore. I don't believe that. If your like thing is like, oh, I want to beat you.
Well, let's take the classic example. Do you want to play tic-tac-toe with me right now?
No.
Why?
Not an interesting game.
Because
it's solved.
Is it not an interesting game because it's just like super simple? Or is it not an interesting game because you can't win it?
It's not interesting because it's algorithmic that it should always end in a draw.
Right.
Because it's simple.
Our game is complicated and ends in a draw.
It's a more interesting path to the draw. The game you were playing last night with Imsabed, where you had thrown in the tower, you're like, oh, it's a draw, and I'm like throwing it away. And Imsabed is like sitting there piecing out, well, what can I do to put myself in a position where if you screw up, I win? And he had a spot where if you screwed up, he won.
Right. But it didn't change the outcome. The game was still a draw, and I felt like, I don't know. I spent 10 minutes playing, and what did I get?
I didn't win. What do you get when you win?
Well, how about, okay, the question you could ask me is, how do you feel when you lose? Do you feel better losing than getting a draw? Like, I think that should be your question. And what is my answer to that? Yeah, no, I feel better losing. Is that weird?
Put yourself into the mythology of the game, though. The game completes. Neither of you found the constellation you were looking for. And you have a beautiful night sky that you've taken in together. A full night sky, a completed night sky.
if you lean into the theme that way, maybe it makes more sense.
You made the argument so, like, the reason we have a theme in the game is because you were so emphatic about we have to lean into a theme. So you can't not now. It's a gentle competition, a leisurely race to find your constellation.
It seems like a good question that we could ask casually while we're testing over the next month. How do people feel about ending the game in a draw? When the game ends in a draw, I can ask people how they feel.
Mm.
What I've noticed, though, when beginners play the game, it is more likely to come to completion because they are not playing it the way I'm so bad as playing the game, where he is looking at all possibilities and not allowing you to get your pattern in a position where you could win. Any pattern that is not I'm so bad's, he's looking at the map and going, okay, well, I can't put this here because if he's that, then he'll be get closer. So I have to do this. And then he's looking for his victory later on.
Sure. And I think we're talking about the two extremes of the game. I think brand new players, it is going to take new players time to learn how to play the game such that they can end up in a draw. And if you have people playing to the extent where they can learn to see the game the way that I'm so bad does, they've already bought the game. I don't think that's a wild perspective or like a wild path for a player's entry into the game.
Well, let me just ask you, is there a percent? Let's say every game right now that you and I played 75% of the time ended in a draw. Are you okay with that?
Probably.
Wow. Because I've stated my number is 20%. I'm fine with 2 out of 10. Anything more than that, and I feel like, eh.
I think I like the Colacoma argument of if you have players of equal skill and you're both playing to your skill, like it makes sense that more games are going to be in a draw. So I think you already have to bump up from the 20%. If you're going to lean on the thematic argument of, you know, we're just two friends like twirling around in the night sky. Ah, I didn't find it. I didn't find it tonight. You didn't find it tonight. Ah, that's okay. Maybe tomorrow night.
That makes me feel warm inside a little.
So I think kind of by that metric, and if you're really into the, I need this to be a competitive endeavor between you and me, I think a draw is a good thing because then you're that competitive person is going to say, I think the competitive person would say, draw, oh man, run it back. And I don't think, if you look at it in kind of in that way, I don't think it's bad. And I think it's a path for answering the question. Well, those sound like things that encourage people to play again. The thematic piece, the skill comparison piece, the leaning into the competitive aspect. Like if all of those things are present in the game for that type of player, I think that would encourage them to play more.
Okay. And so getting us back to the roadmap,
uh-huh.
We went off the road a little bit.
I see what you did there.
And we were trying to determine how many patterns should be on one card for our testing. I am still in the camp right now looking at our team testing and the results. 3 is okay. I think 4, I'm still kind of firmly in that camp where 4 really complicates it. 4 is feels a little overwhelming. And the version I would like to bring to KublaCon is the 3 patterns. Because I don't think I want to go back and forth and test both.
I don't have a strong opinion about the number on the patterns. I do think the game gets a lot less interesting if you both always know your pattern.
I agree. I agree with that.
And that would be my primary argument for saying we should move to 4, because I do think it's not so hard to discern what your opponent is on with 3. I think there's a practical reason to not do 4 that, based on the criteria of how we're trying to put constellations on the same star charts, I actually think having 4 becomes prohibitively hard to do from the way the patterns can be shaped.
With the constraints that we have about how many can share positions with other ones when it rotates.
Yeah.
Because now that it rotates,
it gets weird.
It gets weird. It's hard.
It's so hard.
It has added that. I know I'm so bad was really worried about us moving away from stacking really lowered the complexity. I think the rotation is complex.
It's hard to see.
We haven't solved it. No one has said, well, this is just what you do to combat that.
I think taking one more step back from what's the draw percentage that is acceptable to us, how many constellations need to be on a star chart, I think there's a broader question that those things ask of the game design ask of us, and it is going through and refining. You said the mechanics aren't necessarily done and baked and we're not going to make any changes. I think broadly, we want to be looking at if there are going to be mechanical changes, what are the mechanical changes going to be? And that can be board size, that can be number of constellations on the star chart, that could be your wild tiles in the bag kind of thing, which for the record, I'm strongly opposed to, but that's probably a conversation for a different day.
No, I'm going to have it right now. Because imagine if what we're trying to do, and you're still not convinced that the point is to lower tie percentage, but if the point was to lower the tie percentage, Mark, would there ever be a tie if all tiles were wild? How are you even thinking about it? No, the game would be over with five pieces on the board pretty much anywhere.
Sure.
Right?
But I wouldn't play that game.
Right. Sure. But the point I'm trying to make is as you decrease the number of wild tiles, you're increasing the percent chance of a tie. Or if you look at it from the other way, we only have one wild tile in the game. If you add a wild tile to the bag, you have now decreased the chance of a tie. Just math. And if you put two wild tiles into the bag, it drops more. And the more wild tiles you put into the bag, eventually you get to, there's a 0% chance of a tie.
Sure.
If we're trying to solve for the tie problem, I think that is like a reasonable consideration.
I think it's a reasonable consideration if the tie problem is really a problem.
Sure. I'll give you that. I'll leave it at that.
I guess I was also referring more to, I think I personally don't want like silly, weird one-off tiles.
Well, and that's something we've talked about, right? Again, as another way to break ties or maybe add fun to the game, you have a tile that just does something wild.
But isn't a wild tile.
It's not. I used the wrong word. Yeah. So... most of this roadmap really is playtesting with people right now. This roadmap is getting the game out in front of more people.
That makes sense in terms of what we're trying to accomplish by the end of the year. We want to say, here's the game with minimal changes forthcoming to the way the game plays, the way the game is designed, and then really turn our attention to the rulebook, the world building, the manufacturing, the graphic design, the other logistics, the building a crowdfunding campaign, which is coming up in season 3.
Right. And as much as you might be listening and going, well, you guys need to be thinking about that stuff. We are. I don't think we're going to actively do anything in the next month and a half that really focuses on that, though. I'm not going to do any research right now on campaigns or Kickstarters or, you know, manufacturing. We're going to go into this next month and a half with this playtesting lens of trying to feel like, and for me, I know I've been saying, feel like the game is fun. Get feedback from people that, yeah, this is a game that they would continue to play.
It's a short roadmap to the end of the year. But I think this is an effective roadmap because we've outlined the objectives that we have and then there are actionable things in both. And I think that's where we want to be, especially in the way that we're planning with the way that ends of years go.
You know, the final thing that I had in the old original roadmap was sign partnership agreement. Start the LLC paperwork.
I feel like that's for when you're ready to push the go live button on the Kickstarter or the crowdfunding plan, right? Because that's what Zachary recommended to us is you don't do the LLC until you have something to sell. We don't have anything to sell yet.
Yes, you're correct. So if you're listening and you're going, how can I help? I'd like to play. Find us in Discord. We're looking for new people to play the game and to give us feedback. My feedback form is simple. It's one question. Do you want to play again? So if you want to come try the game, if you haven't tried the game, you know, you can always do it on playingcards.io. But if you'd like to play with us, I'm so bad's in Discord all the time. Ping him. He'd be happy to play the game with anybody. We would be happy. Mark and I would be happy to play the game with anybody who's listening, who's interested in playing.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors.
Did you win?
Probably not that game.
Don't use that. I was hoping you'd do your like standard thing where like it's not misplay, dwarfing on your sister. Even with my mistakes, I still beat her.